Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today is author Terry Brown. For a long time, Terry and her husband had a cross-country tandem bike ride on their bucket list. When they decided to carry out their dream, they teamed up with Toys for Tots to raise money for the organization. In addition to raising money, the adventure brought healing to Terry and a determination to succeed at anything she set out to do. Terry is the author of two novels, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow and An Enemy Like Me. Good morning, Terry. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Terry. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. I was so excited when I heard about this tandem bike ride of yours. Oh my goodness, it sounds like it must have been quite a challenge.
It was.
We also wanted to talk about the fact that as we are here in the latter part of October, this is the time when a lot of organizations start really shoring up their plans for donations to their organizations for Christmas. And since you're affiliated with Toys for Tots, we thought this would be a great subject to talk about at this time of the year. Tell us about the ride and what encouraged you guys to get Toys for Tots involved, or did they get involved with you, or how did that work?
So my husband has wanted to ride across the United States on a bicycle since 1976. Apparently, a group of college did this for part of the bicentennial. And he wanted to do it so badly, but he was in the military. And he always tells people that his sergeant would not give him 3 months off to try to do this big adventure. So he talked about it for years and years and years. And then he and I met and we were dating, and he brought up the fact that he wanted to ride across the United States. Well, during that same period of time, I had just gotten out of a 14-year-long emotionally abusive relationship, and I had been wanting to do some kind of big adventure, something that could, you know, like prove to the world, you know, that I still had something left in me. And I thought, ooh, riding across the United States, that might be an adventure, right? So I asked him, is this something you're going to talk about forever? Or is it something you're going to actually do? And he said he wanted to do it, and I thought, count me in. Let's do this adventure. As we started preparing to go across the country on a tandem bicycle, we thought, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to do this just for us. I mean, if we're going to do this great big thing, we should make it part of something else. What could we make it a part of? Well, my husband has been involved with Toys for Tots for several years, and he is the assistant director in our area. And he said, let's do Toys for Tots. Our area is so poor, and we have such a difficult time raising enough toys and money for the children that need it. Let's see if we can incorporate Toys for Tots into this. So the whole way across the United States, we flew his Marine Corps flag, the United States flag, and a Toys for Tots license plate on the back of our trailer. And we went the whole way across the United States and raised over $37,000 for them.
Wow, Terry, that is amazing. Well, I think this is just so neat that the two of you decided to just take off on your own and do this. And I did not realize your husband was already involved in the Toys for Tots program, so that's where the connection comes in.
Exactly. It was one of those things that we thought, you know, it seems rather selfish to do something this big and just do it because we wanted to. So what could we do to kind of give back? My husband and I are both very much involved in our communities, and we try very hard to give back when we can, to serve whenever possible, and to be able to raise money. And our thought was, if we could raise enough money to have a bicycle for every child that asked for a bicycle, because we get a lot of kids that ask for a bicycle for Christmas. people donate bicycles. So you have to rely on either money that has been donated that you can then go purchase bicycles. And sometimes companies will donate, you know, a batch of bicycles, but there's never enough. On that year, so that was the year of 2020, so we rode during the summer of COVID. That year, bicycles were hard to come by, and you can imagine there was more need than ever for something like Toys for Tots, because there were a lot of parents who had been unable to work full-time, and you know, there was just a lot of need. When we came home, and with the money that we were able to provide, every child in the two counties that asked for a bicycle got one. And every organization that asked for help through Toys for Tots to help children at Christmas got the help that they needed.
Oh, Terry, what a blessing that was. Oh, my goodness. That's just wonderful. What can you tell us, kind of a general overview of Toys for Tots and their mission, and maybe a little bit about how they were started? Share with us what you know.
Okay, so Toys for Tots actually came about, now I don't have the names in my head, but there was a former Marine living in California, and it's been years ago, and he was concerned about the number of children in his area that did not seem to be able to get a good Christmas. And he talked with his wife about it and said, you know, I just don't know what to do. And she said, well, I know what to do. We need to start an organization. And they went through the Marine Corps Reserves and got volunteers through the Marine Corps Reserves to help raise money for these kids in the area. And it grew until it became Toys for Tots nationwide. It is still run entirely by volunteers. One of the things that I love the most about Toys for Tots is that nearly everything that you donate is given directly to children. There is a little tiny bit of overhead, but I believe it's like 2%, and 98% of that goes to kids. If you donate to Toys for Tots, the money stays in your area. So even if you go to the national website and donate, they look at your zip code from where you've donated, and they make sure that the money is going back to where you live, which I just think is phenomenal, because don't we all want to help those that live close to us? So when you're at the grocery store and you see a little child and you think, I wonder if they'll be able to have Christmas, you know that the money that you donated would help a child like that.
Absolutely, Terry. And I was not aware of that myself. Yeah, I always donate money to them, but I was not aware that each donation serves their local area. That is something really important to know, because I've had people ask about that, and I really didn't have an answer. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
And I think another thing that people don't understand about Toys for Tots, they hear the name Tots, and they assume that it is for little children. But really, yeah. Toys for Tots helps get Christmas for anyone from age 0 to 18. So if a family has 3 or 4 children and they're of all ages, Toys for Tots can come in and help give those kids a Christmas.
Okay. And do they accept any kind of mildly used toys or no?
So no, we don't. They're supposed to be new toys. However, if a gently used toy is donated, typically, at least in our area, we know of ways that we can use those and donate them in such a way that they will be used. But they're not given as Christmas presents. So we might know, for instance, of a church that does do gently used toys, and we will make sure that that toy gets to that location. Another thing is we don't normally do clothes. We do toys, but we've had people donate clothes to us. And once again, we know of organizations in the area that do make sure that people have the clothes they need. And we make sure that we get anything that's donated like that to the right organization.
Sure. And I'm thinking for gently used toys, I'm thinking of church nurseries.
Exactly.
Maybe. Yeah, places like that definitely could use them. Terry, can you tell us? I'm just curious, and I'm sure our listeners may be curious as well. Does Toys for Tots claim any particular religious affiliation?
No, it does not. They
Okay.
don't ask. They don't ask the people, what religion they are. We don't even actually sit down and say, do you qualify? We assume that if a parent comes and says, we need help, we assume that they need the help. If they
Okay.
don't need the help, that's between them and their maker. That's not between us and them, right?
Right.
And
Yeah.
we have found generally that when people are seeking help at Christmas time, it's because they need it. They realize that their child isn't going to have a Christmas. So no, it's associated with the Marine Corps Reserve. They're the ones who run it. However, we often do toy collections and toy giveaways through churches, as well as through school systems, governmental agencies. We've worked with foster care programs, and sometimes we will sign up people who are needing toys through like the WIC program. It just kind of depends on the community that you live in and how they're gathering the recipients for the toys. So yeah, we've worked with several of the local churches where they know needs, and they'll say, we have, 27 kids, they're these ages, and we make sure that they get the toys for those kinds of donations as well.
Okay, very good. Because of course I know Operation Christmas Child is another
Right.
that you hear about all the time, and they have a main focus of providing the gospel message to kids. And I didn't think Toys for Tots had that particular purview in what they do. So I just wanted to, as I say, clarify for listeners so that they know. So that they know the difference between the two. And I think Toys for Tots is a wonderful organization, don't get me wrong. But I just wanted to clarify that for listeners. Tell us, Terry, what kind of adventures and challenges did you encounter on your tandem ride?
So for me, this tandem ride was huge. I am not an athletic individual. I enjoy being outdoors, but the kind of outdoors like let's walk on the beach and collect shells, or let's go to the pool and swim, and by that I mean play around in the water and enjoy the sunshine. My husband, on the other hand, is extremely athletic, and he's run marathons and triathlons and jumped out of planes, and he's done all those things. So for him, this was kind of the idea of he's going to do this huge thing and prove he could have one more notch in his belt. But for me, it was way, way, way outside of my comfort zone. When I met him, I had not been on a bicycle in 40 years. 2 years later, I was riding across the United States on a tandem. So that's a pretty big deal there.
Yes, I wondered about that if you were an avid bike rider.
No. I mean, and I had to lose weight and everything else just to be able to go on this ride, because it's just very significant for me to do something this large. I found it to be so challenging. There were so many times that I would stand on the side of the road during a break and just cry and think, I can't do this. I'll never make it. In fact, the first time that happened, my poor husband, he didn't know what to do. We had only been married a year and a half at that point.
Oh my.
Yeah, can you imagine? And he just didn't know what to do. I'm standing there sobbing. We're 25 miles from where we're supposed to go that day. It's hot. The wind is against us. And he doesn't know what to do with me, and he's trying to comfort me, and that just makes me cry harder. He finally just kind of stands there, and I get over it, and I take a deep breath, and I said, okay, let's get on the bike and ride. And he looked so confused, like, I don't know. And I said, I just needed to get it out of my system. I said, and we can't stay here. That happened to me over and over, and I just learned something about myself, which is, I'm an emotional person, and sometimes my emotions get in the way of me being able to have like rational thoughts. So it's best to go ahead and let the emotion out, and then I can say, oh, okay, this is what needs to be done. I did that across the United States. We met some of the most interesting people. We got to participate in an impromptu drum circle. There were some Native Americans. We were right along the edge of a reservation, and they were in a park, so we got to participate in that. We met people from, all nationalities. We actually even met someone who believed in Bigfoot.
Oh, my goodness, how interesting.
Yeah, and not only did he believe in him, but he swears he saw him once.
Wow.
So we just met, a wide variety of people. And what was really interesting, you have to remember, this was COVID summer. Well, COVID summer was also political unrest summer, where everything was burning and people were angry. And what we found, though, was that people were wonderful. We met wonderful individuals who were trying to live their lives, feed their families, enjoy their time, and it kind of renewed our faith in humanity, because the people that we met were just wonderful, and we needed help on a number of occasions. There was a time where the road was completely torn up with construction, and there was no way to ride a bicycle across that 5 miles. And within moments, we had someone willing to put us in the back of their pickup truck and take us across that 5 miles. There was time where there was a huge storm coming. We had 37 miles to go. There was no way we would make 37 miles. And this storm, when I say huge, it was a 3-day storm and it had 60-mile-an-hour straight line winds. There's no way we could have been outside in that. We had to get to our next stop. And someone was willing to drive us to where we needed to go. My husband had an attack. I don't know what to call it. He worked too hard and didn't have enough fuel, and I think he got low sugar, and he got kind of wonky and nearly passed out. Immediately, I sent up a little prayer of, you've got to help me, because what am I going to do? How do I help my husband? And we have a tandem and a trailer, and he can't even walk.
Oh,
immediately, this woman, and it was a woman in a pickup truck, so I felt very comfortable approaching her. And she was able to take us that last 3 miles so that we could rest at a hotel. And then what was even more amazing was I have some first cousins once removed that I have not seen since I was 10 years old that lived in the area, who invited us to come stay with them for a couple of days to let him recuperate. So over and over, we found that people were just kind and willing to help. We also noticed that whenever we sent up a prayer request, we got an answer. It was amazing how we really felt watched over.
Well, that is such a blessing to hear that, Terry, and to hear a person like you tell this story of the kindness and compassion that you encountered is just, oh man, it's a breath of fresh air compared to all that's going on today. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. That is really neat.
You know what's interesting? I know that there's a lot of ugly going on in the world. I'm not blind to it. But I think that we focus a lot on that because the news focuses a lot on that. And I don't know, it's more sensational. People did not, you weren't going to get a news story that said, Terry and Bruce had a wonderful day-to-day riding. And they met some lovely folks at the gas station. That's not news, right? And that what gets on the news is someone shot at Terry and Bruce while riding across the United States, right? That would have been news. I think that part of the reason that we feel that things are so bad is that the news, social media, all of those things really kind of focus on those terrible things that are happening. But as we rode across the United States, even during a really terrible time in the United States, we found over and over and over again that people were generally really good. And I believe that there are bad people out there. I just don't think there are that many of them. I really think most people, when given the opportunity to do something good, do it.
I agree with you 100% there, Terry. Oh, I'm just so happy you had such a good time on this ride, Terry. I cannot imagine physically. I would have been like you. I would have been crying the first 2 miles out.
Honestly, you know, it's interesting. I live on the coast of North Carolina, and the coast area of North Carolina is relatively flat. And so despite the fact that my husband and I rode over 1,000 miles of training across, you know, a little over a year, we didn't have a lot of hills to practice on. So on our very first day out, we were in Oregon, and we were crossing over the mountain range in Oregon on day one. Was up okay. Almost all day. And I did think at the end of day one, oh my, I think I've bitten off more than I can chew.
So I'm confused, Terry. If you lived in North Carolina, how did you start in Oregon?
We flew our tandem out there. We packed it up. There's a company, and I think it's called Bike Flights. And they help you pack up your bike, and they'll send it to wherever you want it to go. So we had sent it out to a bicycle store in Astoria, and then we flew out, met our bicycle there, and we rode all the way back across to Washington, D.C., and then one of Bruce's daughters picked us up there,
And
then got us back home. So that's what we did. Yeah.
That's making sense, because I first thought, well, gee, if you were on the East Coast and you headed west about the time you got to the Rocky Mountains, you should have been pretty well conditioned by then because there's other mountain ranges in between. But I see now where, yeah, if you started out in that rough terrain, oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, we did it the other way. Yeah, we did it the other way around.
Oh, goodness.
And crossing over the Rockies was a big thing. The first time that we had to camp, and so we camped most of the way. Every now and then we got motels, but we camped most of the way, usually in a campground. But there were a couple of times where we literally found a place in the woods and camped, which is very, very different than anything that I'm used to. The idea that there weren't any toilets and no showers, and like we bathed in a river, and it was cold because it was in Idaho, and it was, you know, mountain runoff, and it was cold. And when one washes in mountain runoff cold water, you get into your knees and you kind of like splash the water up into what I call the pieces and parts, and then you get out very quickly because it's very cold.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Terry, you shared with us what you learned about other people on the journey. Was there a particular deeper connection with God than you had before during this trip?
You know, I do think that I saw his hand in so many things. I realized that we were being cared for and watched over. And I also learned something really important about myself. And that was that I'm capable. You know, I had been in this emotionally abusive relationship. I lived in it for 14 years. When I got out, even though I'm now, you know, away from that kind of abuse, there's a lot of leftover stuff in your head that, you know, tells you you're not good enough, that you're not capable, that you can't do. And I thought that I was going across the United States to prove to other people that I still had value. And what I was really needing to do was prove that to myself. And when I finished that ride, I recognized I could do absolutely anything I put my mind to. It really wasn't a matter of, can I do it? It was a matter of, do I want to do it? What do I want to do with my life? Because I now understood that I'm capable. And I think that's God's message to all of us, is that, especially with his help, that we're capable and we're able to do those things, especially if what we're wanting to do fits his plan. And so I think that really helped me just heal myself and realize that great worth, and that I could do those things in my life that I really wanted to do.
And I think it's quite amazing when, for all of us, when we realize that God does equip us for whatever purpose he has assigned to us, more or less. He equips us for that.
That is so true.
Oh, there are just ways that God comes in and helps us out, and he incorporates other people into that, and it is. It's pretty fascinating to see how he works.
It is. It is. And like I said, the number of times where we would recognize a problem and immediately there would be a solution. And it was often in the form of another person who was there to help. And I think, you know, isn't that a lot like life? There have been so many lessons on that ride that I've applied to life since then. Things like, we took way too much stuff to begin with and ended up sending 20 pounds of things home, and then 10 days later sending another 20 pounds of things home because we didn't need as much as we thought we did. There's a life lesson in that. And there's life lessons in the idea of you can't do it alone. And life is not meant to do it alone. You're supposed to reach out, and that it's okay to reach out, and that getting help is perfectly acceptable. In fact, really the best way to live your life is to reach out and give help and get help. The idea that is something that I always have to remember is I love to give service, and it's kind of sometimes hard to accept service. And then I have to remind myself, if everybody was like that, I wouldn't have anyone to give service to.
True.
You know, in order to give service, there have to be people who receive it. And so that we all have times in our life where we're the givers, and then there are the times where we're the receivers. And that's okay. That's what life is. But I just learned lesson after lesson after lesson. And I think that I highly recommend that people go and do something really outside their comfort zone. It doesn't have to be 3,102 miles of tandem bicycling, but go do something that's really big, beyond what you normally would do. And you will learn so much about who you are as a person and how God supports you in the things that you do. I can just guarantee you that you will see life so differently once you have done this big thing, whatever it is. And for some people, a big thing, it might not be physical. It doesn't have to be something like a 3-month adventure across the United States. But do something that you don't think you can do, something that you wonder, do I really have the capability? And then put your trust out there. You're going to be amazed at what you can accomplish.
Well, it sure sounds like you learned a lot on this journey, Terry, and that you should write a book. And, of course, you did.
I did. In fact, that was the thing. Yeah, when I got done writing, I knew I could do anything I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was be an author. I had manuscripts that I hadn't let anyone see because I was afraid. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't believe that I could be an author. Not me. I didn't believe in myself anymore. Well, when I got done with that ride, I thought, I can be an author. If that's what I want, then I can do it. And 14 months after we finished writing across the United States, my first book was published by Atmosphere Press. So Sunflowers Beneath the Snow. Yeah, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow came out in January of 2022.
Oh, that is so neat.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just really believe that, you know, if you have a dream, then grab onto it and do what you can, because if you really want it, I think that you can probably achieve it in most cases. I mean, I couldn't be a ballerina. But then again, I don't know that I'd really want to be one because I'm very clumsy. But I'm just saying that if it's something you really want, then go after that dream. You should go after it. I don't believe in bucket lists anymore, because a bucket list to me is just a big list of dreams that you don't plan to achieve. And my thought is make a to-do list and then start getting it done.
Terry, I just have to admire you. It's just so wonderful to hear somebody who fulfilled that dream. And would you please tell us about your novels that you have out? You have two, correct?
I do, and I have a third one coming out.
Great. Okay,
yeah,
give us a little overview.
Yeah, I will. So Sunflowers Beneath the Snow is my first novel. It's about three generations of Ukrainian women. And the really crazy thing is it came out in January of 2022, 2.5 weeks before the current Ukrainian crisis. So I had no idea that was going to happen. And I've been asked a lot of times, how did you know? And it's like, no, that's not the way publishing works. So this story has a little bit of truth to it. I have a Ukrainian friend. She's the same age as one of my daughters. And in 2016, she told me this incredible story that I thought, oh my gosh, that should be like a movie or a book. But at the time, I was still living in that horrible relationship, and I wasn't writing, and I didn't believe I could ever be a writer. But of course, the story was there in my head. And so I went ahead and started writing on that in 2018. And I tell everyone that I wrote 82,000 words of fiction to tell 3 pages of truth. So the last 3 pages, the last 3 pages of the last chapter are true. And then everything else is me making stuff up so that I could get to that true story.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So my next story is An Enemy Like Me. And it is a World War II genre fiction. It is about a first-generation German-American. So his parents were born in Germany. He was born in America. World War II happens. He ends up becoming a soldier, but he believes he's going to fight the Japanese. He ends up in Germany fighting the Germans and realizes that he's more like the enemy than he is different from the enemy. So we look at war from his point of view, also from his wife's, and from his 4-year-old son who was left behind, and that 4-year-old son as an adult man looking back. So it kind of just takes a look at, like, what is war and who is our enemy and what makes an enemy and are enemies even necessary in today's world. It's one of the things I hope people really look at when they're reading that story. And then my third is coming out in January, so I'm super excited about it. It's called Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. It is also a 3-generation story. It's about a healer woman in the 1890s. She lives in the North Carolina mountains. Healers in the North Carolina mountains were called granny women. And so she's a granny woman, and her daughter decides to become an actual nurse and goes to school for nursing. And then there's a lot of contention between the granny woman who has learned things from various people, including a Cherokee medicine man, and the daughter who believes in, you know, the modern way of doing medicine.
Modern medicine.
So there's a lot of contention, right? There's a lot of contention between them. And I like the idea of, you know, thinking about, do we throw the baby out with the bathwater? I think we do. You know, something new and shiny comes along and we throw out the old thing and we gravitate towards a new thing. That's been true of medicine, but if you look at medicine now, people are starting to go back to some of this granny woman type medicine.
Absolutely.
Right. It's because there were some good things in it. I don't mean that it is that there's nothing good about modern medicine. I'm just saying there was no need to throw everything away. I think we learn that over time. I mean, we even see it in things like, you know, DVDs came in and there was no vinyl anymore. Nobody wanted to listen to an album. And now all of a sudden, what's the big craze? It's listening to old albums again. And I think that we just need to understand that just because something's new and shiny doesn't mean that the old thing has no value anymore. And we can even look at that in terms of people. Just because someone is getting elderly doesn't mean that they don't have any value. And so it's just that idea of, you know, do we throw that baby out or do we hang on to it? And so that story kind of has that going through it.
Terry, all 3 of your stories sound so compelling.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. What do you find most rewarding about being an author, Terry? And do you have a special routine? Are you one of these organized people that sits down from, you know, 6 to noon every day and writes? Or what does your writing life look like for you, and what is the most rewarding thing about it?
So we'll start with the most rewarding thing. I love connecting with people. And as an author, I have been invited to some book clubs and to, you know, like library events. And I get to connect with people who have either already read the book or who just love to read, and so they've come to find out more about the book. And I love making those connections. I went to a book club the other evening, and one of the ladies said, oh, let me read a sentence out of the book that meant so much to me. that just made my whole day, the fact that I could write something that someone else connected with and that that was something they continued to think about. To me, that's the most wonderful part, is making these connections with individuals and seeing how my words have impacted them in some way. I would love to say that I was this organized author and that I had these fabulous outlines and that I wrote a certain number of words every day, but I would be lying to you. And I just don't think that's the way we want to end this conversation, with a lie. So I am what they call a pantser. And a pantser is someone who writes by the seat of their pants. I don't have an outline. I usually have a character who is in my head and has a story to tell. And I just start writing and see where this story goes. I tend to write when the mood hits me. And unfortunately, the mood hits me, and then I write for hours and hours and hours. So I tell people that I'm a binge pantser, which means that I might write, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 hours for 4 or 5 days in a row, and then I might not write anything for weeks because I don't have anything in my mind, and then all of a sudden it will hit me again. When I am doing my binge writing, I tend to forget everything. I forget to make dinner. I forget to take a shower. I forget that we own a dog. I forget all of those things. I really love it when I have the opportunity to go on a writer's retreat where I'm actually out of my home for a week or two and I don't have anything I'm supposed to do except write. That to me is the best thing in the world, because it's hard to write at home because I do have a husband and I do have a dog. And I do have laundry that needs doing and groceries that need to be bought and all of those things. But when I'm on a writer's retreat, no one expects any of that of me. And exactly. It gives me the opportunity to sit down and write. Yeah, I probably need to try this whole thing of writing every day, but I've tried it before and it just doesn't work for me. I sit and stare at the computer for 3 hours and the whole time I'm thinking I could be folding clothes.
Yes, but Terry, if you're productive, what difference does that make? If that routine works for you, then it works for you. I mean, we're all wired differently, so I certainly would not think that that detracts from your writing career at all. And obviously, if you have two out there, and one on the way in January, you're doing pretty good. So,
I think that it's a little embarrassing, though, because a lot of people, when I'm going and talking to groups or whatever, people really expect that that's what I do, that I sit down and that I write from 6 a.m. to noon or from noon to 5, or that I, you know, keep a schedule. And it's like, I hate to disappoint them, but it just doesn't work for me. It just does not work for me. I've tried, and I'll sit and I'll even write. And I end up throwing away most of it because it isn't any good, because it's forced. I'm making myself do something that my mind is just not ready to do. But when it is ready, I sit down and I type and I type and I type and I type. And I, for instance, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, I went to a 2-week writer's retreat. And at the end of that 2 weeks, I had the first draft of that book done.
Oh, that's amazing. That's wonderful.
But of course, I did nothing else. You know, exactly. And so that's kind of the way I write. I like to sit down and have that time, and you just give your mind over to the writing.
Well, Terry, I want to thank you. You've shared so much with us today, and thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciated being able to talk about The Ride and Toys for Tots and, of course, my books.
Yes, most definitely. And I have links that I will put up, of course, so that folks will know where to find you and where to get some information about Toys for Tots. And yes, it's been really great to visit with you. God bless you in your writing and all that you do.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled pattysheene.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the homepage. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheen. Until next time, God bless you.